Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of HBR News. This one is HBR News number 185. Alyssa Milano disavows Sarsour, techno masculinity. Yes, that's a thing now. And blowjobs, no matter how much they want to give them to you, don't actually mean consent. I am your host, Brian Martinez, and I am here with my panelists to look at the best feels, funnies, and what the fucks to discuss Clam Slam Badger style. Let's get started, shall we? We're just going to jump right into it. So today's panel, we got Mike J. and Mike Stevenson,
but you can pronounce it the old Viking way if you like, but it's generally Stevenson.
Stevenson, it is. And Hannah Wallen is not here yet, although I have her badger there. She will be coming here a little bit late. She just has some stuff going on with her house, but she said she'll join us as soon as she is available. And that's okay, because we have lots to talk about. Lots of interesting topics, we'll say, for you guys today. So please be sure to continue the conversations both in the chat as well as the comments section. I literally had like 13 different stories I wanted to talk about, and I had to narrow it down to 5. So there's a lot that I didn't bring up that I think would have been fun, but I just had to leave it. So we're not going to be talking about all of the thugs outside of that were outside of Tucker Carlson's house. Unfortunately, we're not going to be talking about I think there was a I had a story about some college stuff where there was crazy stuff going on. So here's what we do have, though. On this week's HBR News show, we're going to be talking about Alyssa Milano's comments on Linda Sarsour and Louis Farrakhan and other sort of people associated with the Pussy Hat Women's March. I thought it was just an event, but it turns out it's an organization. It's a group. There's a tribe there. We're also going to be talking about the hero of Australia known as Trolley Man. If you don't know, you're going to. But I guess people who live in the Down Under, the Upside Down Land, they probably do know about this. The latest with the
We all live in the Upside Down Land.
Yes. The latest with the Oculus Rift founder Palmer Luckey, which is very interesting, and a lot more. So stick around. It's going to be a good time. And also, stick around afterwards for the patron-only after shows. Now, here's just an excerpt. The first paragraph from the patron-only after show story. I shit you not, this was written. Stan Lee tragically passed away at the age of 95. You may have heard of that. He leaves behind as rich a legacy as anyone will this century, having done no less than author a generation's hopes and dreams. Now that his part in the Marvel Cinematic Universe needs to be recast, we need to do the right thing and make sure a person of color takes over the role. Okay, so it's a satirical piece, but I thought it was so funny that we had to talk about it. So we're going to read through it in the after show. Not real, guys. Not real. Don't get mad. But very funny. We need a person of color to take over the Stan Lee role now that he's dead. So is this too soon? I don't know if that's too soon, but I think that as much as I love Stan Lee, I'm okay with having a laugh at the stuff that people are writing, using his death to sort of make a point about the NPC thinking that goes on. So anyway, if you want to be...
This is how you have an Irish funeral. You get together and have a laugh about stuff, and you may wonder, well, how do you do that? You have a laugh at all the bastards who hated him.
Exactly. Anyway, if you want to participate in our after shows either as an audience member or a participant, please consider becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. And if you don't want to wake up one morning to find yourself unable to find our content because YouTube finally dropped the axe on our channels, go to badgerfeed.com. That's badgerfeed.com. And lastly, we are currently doing a fundraiser to send me to Toronto this Friday. That's the day after tomorrow. I'm going to be going to Toronto, hopefully, to sort of see the Will Ferrell's talk, where he's going to be talking about the boy crisis. And if you guys have been following sort of like the men's movement stuff and anti-feminist stuff for a while, you may remember about 6 years ago, I think it was, there was a protest that was filmed by Steve Brule outside of the University of Toronto, I think it was. And there were all these angry feminists chanting, "This is what men's rights looks like." It's actually featured in the Red Pill briefly, along with a specific character that we call fucking Thcum Girl. That's Thcum, S-T-H-C-U-M, who was essentially just yelling at this guy who just wanted to go inside and find out what Will Ferrell had to say. And so I'm going back there to find out, partly to talk to Warren Farrell, hopefully, as well as Justin Trottier, who's setting all this up. But, you know, maybe she'll be there. Maybe she'll show up and she will not have aged a day. But this is actually before there was Big Red, there was fucking Thcum Girl, I think.
It was the same as the this is what men's rights look like chant, wasn't it? It was the same event, yeah. Where the police politely did their job and then stood back.
I believe some of the cops were women too, weren't they? I think so. Warren Farrell. Did I say Will Farrell? Sorry, Warren Farrell. I may have mispronounced. I don't know. Okay, so yeah, if you can, the link to that should also be in the low bar. You just go to Feed the Badger and you will see the fundraiser there. If you could give us a hand. Also, be sure to go to CAFE, the website, Canadian Association for Equality, just to see what they're up to, because they always got stuff cooking. It is mainly focused in Canada, but hopefully they can be a model for the United States as well. So let us get into the stories. I have to say, I gotta give a shout out to my wife. She was very, very helpful. She's always been really helpful. She puts together these great PowerPoints. And she helps me do the write-ups. And she did that today, despite the fact that I was gone for part of the day at a doctor's appointment. Basically just some follow-up stuff. You know, I have to do blood tests and so on. And she had a ton of walks. Dog walks. She does dog walking. And she had a ton of work and managed to squeeze this in. So thanks. Thank you, babe. And I love you. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and get into the stories now. So actress Alyssa Milano, you might know her from Who's the Boss, back when I used to have a crush on her, she disavows the Women's March. Now, like, this is odd because she was a big, big proponent of it and also a big Me Too supporter. So, but let's get into why and what happened. Actress, liberal activist, and founder of the Me Too movement, Alyssa Milano, has stated that she will not be participating in the next Women's March as she disapproves of the organization's ties with Black nationalist and Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. Uh-oh, somebody noticed. Milano was a driving force behind the massive feminist demonstration, which was initially organized in opposition to President Trump's inauguration last year. On her decision to distance herself, Milano said the following, quote, "Any time that there is any bigotry or anti-Semitism in that respect, it needs to be called out and addressed. I'm disappointed in the leadership of the Women's March, that they haven't done it adequately." Farrakhan's speeches are often filled with anti-Semitic comments, also anti-white, but I guess we're just going to ignore that. And the Nation of Islam is opposed to LGBT rights, beliefs which do not coincide with most pussy-hatted marchers. However, Milano is now being tarred as a racist. Of course she is. Milano's critics often point to her whiteness as a quote-unquote argument. Here's a tweet. This one from Glenn Greenwald. Do you guys know who Glenn Greenwald is? Glenn Greenwald?
Yeah, he's some kind of pseudo-intellectual. He often has spats with Sam Harris. That's what I know him from.
I know him from that, too. I remember Sam Harris went ham on him, a while back. But, okay, Glenn Greenwald says, "White actress announces boycott of Women's March unless it gets rid of the Palestinian-American women and African-American woman who founded it, or until they recite from the script she demands." Oh my God, what an asshole. I'm sorry, he's such an asshole. And then there's, this is in response to Yashar Ali's tweet that reads, "Alyssa Milano says she will not speak at the next Women's March as long as Linda Sarsour and Tamika Mallory remain a part of the leadership and refuse to condemn Louis Farrakhan's anti-Semitism." So conservative journalist Laura Loomer and her tire asked Milano if she disavowed feminist Muslim activist Linda Sarsour, also known as the Cockroach. Milano did not at the same time, 2 weeks prior, but now cites Sarsour as one of the obstacles for her participation in the Women's March, along with the organization's connection with Farrakhan.
By the way, before anyone does us for calling her a cockroach, that's what Sarsour means. For anyone who doesn't know that yet, we're allowed to say that and not sound like Nazis.
Exactly.
She's proud of being a cockroach, as a matter of fact.
No, she doesn't mind. Also, I did a breaking story on this. Linda Sarsour has ties to, not that, again, it's correlation, not necessarily causation. Thank you, French Honey Badger. He gives us $5 and says, Glenn Greenwald is usually good when attacking the government, and I prefer him to Sam Harris, but that was dumb. So she might be, Linda Sarsour does have some ties to the, I don't know if you remember, there was that camp in New Mexico that was training children for school shootings. And one of the people that it was an Islamic camp, and it was actually mostly women that were training their children, sons, to become foot soldiers for Islam. I'm not kidding. This is what happened. And one or two of them one of them's like the son of the guy who was Linda Sarsour's mentor. So there are ties there. So, I mean, Linda Sarsour is kind of fucked up, is what I'm saying.
And the whole thing got swept under the rug.
We don't talk about it anymore. Yeah, that New Mexico camp, eh.
They literally found a dead child in a collapsed cave.
Yes.
But it's just not as photogenic as a dead child on a beach, is it?
No, not quite.
It's all about the optics, folks.
Location, location, location. But, On the topic of this, I'm getting flashbacks to the 2014 Godzilla trailer, where he just says, "Let them fight."
Yeah, I was talking about Ken Watanabe the other day because he's in that new Pokemon movie. Oh my god, that looks so bad! And I saw him in it, and I was like, "Isn't this guy like an Academy Award nominated actor? He's got to be crying inside." Yes,
that movie's gonna make bank.
it probably is, but then so did fucking...
Oh, come on, Ryan Reynolds with Pikachu, it's gonna do gangbusters, man.
That
man
prints money! That's printing money! But anyway, back to this. So, I gotta... The thing that I find interesting about it is Alyssa Milano seems to be experiencing... maybe... I wouldn't say it's cognitive dissonance, but I think what's happening here is that she's almost going to find out that the motivations behind a movement like the Women's March may not actually be based in real equality, or it may not have anything to do with that, and that it's no accident that people like Linda Sarsour and Louis Farrakhan might have some connections to it. In fact, the fact that, what's his name, Glenn Greenwald, comes forward and says that because Alyssa Milano has criticisms of the ideas of people who happen to be, in his mind, people of color, and then just dismisses her as a white woman that should not be talking, who's talking out of place, I hope that she realizes what's going on doesn't really have anything to do with the feel-good sentiments that she probably thought it did. In fact, I think that the Women's March was a highly politicized movement from put together by really powerful people that want more power. And that's all it is. And that's what I think. I bet if you dig, that's what you'll find.
The justifications people use for anti-Semitism a lot of the time are that Jews are in control of everything. They're disproportionately in control of more than you would expect them to be. That there's the same kind of justifications that one uses against white men, or that the Women's March type organizer type feminists. I'll just call them feminists. That they say about the white men, as we know from how easy it is to compare their manifestos with Hitler's manifesto. And I have to wonder, like, what side of this fence they're going to fall on. Because this is Alyssa Milano like falling down on the side of the, hey, what you're saying about Jews is wrong, and I bet she still thinks what they say about white men is right. But I have to wonder how many feminists are gonna find themselves just out of opportunism falling down on the side of the fence where they go, no, well, I suppose it's true about Jews as well. So, Let's do to choose what we do to white men, okay, I suppose.
What did Farrakhan call them? He said they were cockroaches or something. I think he may have said that.
Termites,
that's right. Termites. Sarsour is the cockroach, Jews are termites. I got it now.
Jew is not the Arabic word for termite. He's actually comparing them to insects. Sarsour is the Arabic word for cockroach.
Anti-termitic.
That's good. Hannah is
here.
Hannah's
here.
Hello.
Did you hear what the story was, or do you need a quick...
I gathered it just from what Mike said. I'm of two minds on this. Like, I'm glad to see Alyssa Milano disavowing the Women's March, even though, I mean, she's going to be doing some things that I'm going to disagree with.
Oh,
anyway,
for sure. She's still crazy.
Well, and like, all right, so I don't know how many people who listen to us follow Thomas Wichter, but there was a whole drama with Thomas Wichter where Alyssa Milano treated something he said about social justice types getting themselves in trouble as a direct threat that he was going to do something to her, called the FBI... And actually got him booted from Twitter, which really didn't do anything to him. It was kind of an Obi-Wan moment. I think he's getting more followers on Gab than anything. But like, I started following his YouTube channel specifically because of what she did to him. So that really kind of backfires there. But she's done some pretty crazy shit. But she's right about this. And in that. Like, they are, Sarsour is just nuts. And the fact that she is kind of heading things up, the fact that she's become in charge in terms of the Women's March, and she was part of the start of it anyway, she was one on the original board, totally 100% discredits everything to do with the Women's March. Like, there is nothing good about the Women's March as long as Sarsour is involved, period. They could advocate for fundraising for cancer, and I would still say, yeah, but this crazy woman who hates Jews and wants to see them all die, and who hates men and wants to see them all controlled, is in charge of this. So I can't trust anything they do. And that's... at least we know now where Alyssa Milano's crazy line ends. It ends at genocide. And, you know, at least she's not Hitler crazy.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe it'll start to sink in that there's something more. So let them keep showing their ass is what I say.
And I'm willing to accept that to some degree, Linda Sarsour is a victim of her religion, and the women in the Middle East are also a victim of their religion. But so are the poor buggers they raise, including the male ones. They're all victims of the same religion. One might say equally, but I don't live there, so I don't know.
Yeah, you know, or they just turn them into soldiers like they did in New Mexico. Oh wait, that didn't actually happen. I'm sorry.
There's a limit to how much slack you can cut somebody on that, though. I mean, you raise your kids, and you're with your kids the whole time you're raising them. You should develop an attachment to your kids. You should have some sort of, you know, oh my God, I hope nothing bad happens. Like, my worst nightmares are bad things happening to my family, right? My whole family. And, like, I have some pretty fucked up nightmares. Everybody knows that. The idea of raising a child to kill themselves, it's just completely... I can't cut somebody slack on that. I can't call somebody a victim of a religion where it's your job as part of your religion to raise your child to be so dedicated to their religion that they will strap a bomb to their chest and blow themselves up. That's, you know, maybe that's my crazy line. I can believe that people can get caught up in a cult. I can believe that people can think the end of the world is coming. I can believe all kinds of things. But just like I couldn't cut the woman in Texas slack on drowning all of her children one at a time. And because she had to see them die. She had to see what they were going through when she did that to them and ignore their pain and suffering to continue doing that to them. I can't cut anybody slack on that. I can't call somebody a victim of a belief system they adhere to while doing things that I see as that crazy and that bad. So, yeah.
That's why I started with the proviso, you might say, if they are victims of their religions, then so are the people they raise, i.e. so are the men. I was making that point again. I mean, Sussor's not a victim of anything.
Here she is in the United States, where she has all the freedom in the world. You know, there isn't a place you can go in the world that's more free than you are here, which is one of the reasons why giving up our freedoms here is such a big deal. It's why they're so precious. There's no place left to go if you want those freedoms. You give them up here, they're gone. They're extinct. And here she is advocating for a system that takes away everybody's freedom and expects some people to die for it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on, but let us know in the comment section what you think about this. This is obviously ongoing, and we're talking about individuals. So we're just talking about Alyssa Milano's specific interaction with, you know, the rest of the Women's March and how people treat it. And by the way, I have friends. They were friends. I don't know, like, if we could, I could really call myself friends, but they're people I knew from high school that are very, very, like, pro-black folks that very, very much admire Louis Farrakhan, which, okay, I struggle with that a bit. And they were also criticizing, you know, vocally, Alyssa Milano for being a white woman that has a problem with black people that are racist. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts? I mean, it's a small thing. At the end of the day, it's a small thing. But it could... It's meaningful because it's sort of like a look at... it's a look into, you know, what the normies are seeing, you know, if they're looking at this, because this is big news, right? Everyone's hearing about it, so it's good to look and see what the normies are thinking, because maybe they will also apply ideas across the board. Like, they will see it as, well, you know, being racist against whites is the same as being racist against blacks, for example, you know. So I already fed him. We're going to move on. I'm sorry. My wife's asking me if JoJo's eaten. So we're going to move on to the next story.
Has JoJo eaten Brian?
He has. I fed him. I did it before.
No, it's obvious that JoJo hasn't eaten Brian because Brian is here talking.
There was a comma somewhere in that statement.
Brian might be the name of a nearby squirrel.
Punctuation saves lives.
My name is Pretty Common. Okay, so...
Nice to meet you, Pretty Common.
Oh my god, you guys,
it's gonna be like that now.
It's gonna be one of them days.
So we're gonna move on to the next story. So do you not know what the hell techno masculinity is? Well, you can bet your LED light rimmed fedora that it hurts women's. University of Idaho professor Robin Johnson published his study Techno Masculinity and Its Production in Video Games in October. Johnson describes techno masculinity as, quote, an expression of masculinity that is oriented toward the mastery of technology and skilled use of technological tools and systems.
No, wait a minute here. He did not just do that. He did not just say being good at things is a masculine trait. Did he just say that being good at things is... Because it looks to me very much like he just said, being good at things is a masculine trait, and that makes it bad.
That's a man thing, yeah. Yeah, it's. I think that's what he's saying, but let's get into it a little bit more. And then it's a short one. So Okay, so techno-masculinity, an expression of masculinity that is oriented towards the mastery of technology and skilled use of technological tools and systems, end quote. And this is a problem, of course, as Johnson argues that techno-masculinity hurts women. Quote, gender is socially organized in the West in a hierarchized, is that even a thing? A hierarchized binary differentiating men and women along supposedly natural or biological masculine and feminine traits. The association between technology, masculinity, and what we think of as skilled work is still fundamental to the gender division of labor, and thus the oppression of women and the gender pay gap, he added. So,
Have you heard of lexo-femininity? It's, you know, it's this way that women use words and shit. So we should show...
Yeah. Being good at making up new words.
It is possible that, you know, men, you know, created bows and sort of wheels and shit. But I reckon it was women who invented language, especially spoken language. It's just a theory. But so, there's every reason to suspect that women invented bows as well. Why wouldn't they?
We invented nagging. Have you fed the dog? No, just kidding. Oh, shit. That's not nagging. That's just a question. But he did. This seems to be an assertion that being good at things is an expression of masculinity that hurts women. And I just want you guys to know that when I go to the doctor for, you know, regular checkups and stuff like that, and I go and have my boobs put in a vise and x-rayed and all that and everything that they call a mammogram, I want the technology to be misread and misused so they don't find out if I have breast cancer. I want whoever's doing that job to just absolutely suck at it, because... Being a master of that technology, being skilled in the use of that technological tool and system, I definitely am offended if the X-ray tech does her job right. Definitely think she's too masculine, and it's almost always a woman. And of course, if they have to do an ultrasound because she couldn't read. I don't want the person doing the ultrasound to know their shit either, because that's just so misogynistic. If they can tell me that I need treatment or that I don't need treatment, they can make sure that question is not in the back of my head going, you know, what's this lump? I should have to worry about that for the rest of my life, because it's just misogynistic. If people who work in technical areas are good at their jobs. I mean, come on. It's so evil. Shame on those people.
It needs to end.
Thousands of people worked at Bletchley Park. Most of them were women. And that was when computers were invented. That was, like, actually, literally, the fucking establishment where computers were invented. The tech community and the people who work in it have been... largely women, and has been woman-friendly since the very beginning. So what the fuck do you mean by techno?
Well, techno is, you know, you mean techno-masculinity specifically, right? If it was techno-femininity, it'd be fine.
I forget what techno means. It's one step above industrial, right?
That's what I think of, but... boots and pants.
Oh, I always thought it was cats. Boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats.
Would that be puss in boots? And if so, if you grab that puss, is it misogynistic?
Only if you grab it by the it.
by itself.
By the scruff of the neck?
How did this guy come up with it? So briefly... Johnson wrote in his new piece, and I'm sure this is actually a real, academic paper and not one of those fake ones, because those are just ridiculous.
I'm going to interrupt. I just want to remind you, this is a guy named Johnson talking about masculinity. Go on.
Okay. But just Robin Johnson. So maybe he took it from somebody else without permission. Johnson writes in the new piece, Techno-Masculinity and Its Production in Video Games, that after interviewing 20 whole video game developers, he discovered that technomasculinity is rampant in the gaming industry, hurting women and LGBTQ people in the process. In an interview with PJ Media Sunday, Johnson described technomasculinity as, quote, an expression of masculinity that is oriented toward the mastery of technology and skilled use of technological tools and systems. In popular culture, this type of masculinity is often associated with individuals who are highly competent with computers, but typically lacking in social or physical skills. So if you're a nerdy guy that likes computers, you are dangerous to women and LGBTQ people.
And the correct approach to numbers is, again, that bit from The Simpsons. How does the number 7 make you feel?
Well, you know, damn that competence. That competence is just destroying the world, right? Competent people should be shot. Everybody else can stay.
Unbelievable. James Damore is a scary, scary man. And women should be very afraid. because he's awkward and nerdy and smart.
Cluster B should be afraid of autists.
You know how else technomasculinity hurts women? Like pilots, right? Airline pilots. When I get on an airplane, if I get to the other end of the flight alive, that just ruins my day. Just awful. I just don't know how to deal with that. Like, now I'm in an entirely different place, and sometime in the future I'm going to have to come back. And it's all the pilot's fault for being skilled at taking off and flying the plane and going the correct direction and landing. And those goddamn people in the tower giving the correct directions and understanding mathematics. What's wrong with those people? This techno-masculinity thing. This is really bad. It's insidious. It's everywhere.
Yeah, no. Techno-masculinity created Instagram thoughts. So obviously it's bad. I mean, there wouldn't be an Instagram and there wouldn't be thoughts on Instagram if it wasn't for that. Okay, so I got some super chats. Exploding Pretty gives us $5. All those damned techno-masculinists demanding a Diablo game on their PC, entitled phone-paying women haters. Dude. Yeah. Don't you have a phone, Exploding Pretty? Because if you don't, then... Well, I mean, what's wrong with you? French Honey Badger gives us $5 and says techno prefix means...
By the way, are you misspelling dude? Because we can't even say dude anymore. Like D-U-D-E. Is that a prison term, does it mean?
Oh, no. All prinnies. They all spell dude D-O-O-D. So it's okay. That's prinny language. They have to put a dude at the end.
Now I don't trust them.
Yeah. But they're just little penguin dudes.
Well, they do explode.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust them.
Or at least that one does.
Purple penguins.
They are purple, yeah.
Interesting.
Sometimes.
Yeah. French Honey Badger gives us $5 and says techno prefix means skill, dexterity, industry. It also came to mean artificial, or dare I say, man-made. Made by men. Of course, just made by people.
How deep does the problem go?
Alan Turing was a man. He wasn't particularly masculine.
Yeah.
But he was very technical minded.
Okay, so yeah, so anyway, techno masculinity, look out for that. It's the new thing. It's the new thing hitting the streets. It's I don't know. It's
techno-masculinity, the techno-masculinists. That sounds like it should be like a gang in the next cyberpunk, in the cyberpunk game.
It sounds like an evolution of cyberpunk, you know? Once there was cyberpunk, now it's evolved into techno-masculinity.
Just like a bunch of bodybuilders on computers.
Dude bros on computers.
Do you even code, bro?
Hey, is Steam masculinity a thing? Where you wear really big top hats and ridiculously large, like, steam-powered gold watches and shit.
I'll bet it is.
Your weights are made out of pure bronze, and they're all covered in gears and shit.
Before steampunk becomes too masculine.
Wouldn't your watch be clockwork?
Yes.
Well, technically.
They think I broke everybody. For a second there. I don't want anything steam powered touching my skin. Thank you. No.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next story, but tell us what you think about that one in the comments section. I look forward to seeing them as always. So now we're going to talk about something positive. They don't happen too often on this show, so I try to jump on them when I can. Mike J., would you tell us a little bit about Trolley Man?
Yes, Trolley Man, the hero we need. During the stabbing attack that occurred over the weekend at the Bourke Street Mall in Melbourne, or as my Australian friends tell me it is pronounced Melbourne, Australia, one man would emerge as a hero. Michael Rogers, a 46-year-old homeless man, attempted to ram the knife-wielding attacker, Hassan Khalif Shire Ali.
Who was obviously just an Asian man, but go on.
Yes, yes, an Asian man.
An Asian man.
Probably a Jew.
Descript appearance. Easily a Buddhist. With a shopping cart before police were able to subdue him. The Buddhist, not the homeless man. His display of courage has earned him the nickname Trolley Man. And the internet wants to support him. A GoFundMe page, simply entitled Thank You Trolley Man, has raised over $140,000. The GoFundMe page reads, "We've since learned that our hero, Trolley Man, is homeless, and that his phone was destroyed in the incident. We believe his efforts deserve a reward that can really help him out. He's a hero in our eyes, and he can do what he feels best with any funds he receives. He risked his own life that day for nothing in return, and you can't put a price on that."
Wait, so he's legit homeless and legit has had a phone? Whenever I see a homeless person with a phone, I'm always skeptical, you know, as to how homeless they are.
Well, you can get a phone pretty cheap, actually. You pay for it one time and it's paid for. And sometimes you just have this phone that's Wi-Fi capable, and you use Wi-Fi. You don't necessarily pay for phone service unless you get cash here and there and you go buy. This is something that I've noticed in my area. A lot of homeless people have those prepaid phones that even those that are capable of getting online with Wi-Fi are not that expensive. But actually getting into even an apartment, you have to have a credit rating to rent an apartment. You have to have a credit rating to do anything anymore. And it's very easy to turn someone down just because you don't like the way they're dressed, even if they have something like disability checks coming in. So there are people who are homeless because they have mental health conditions, or because they have they're alcoholic, or they have a drug problem, and they haven't received treatment, but they can get a phone and they can get online, that's basically their entertainment. It seems like a bigger contradiction than it is. So I wouldn't necessarily discount that someone is homeless because they have a phone.
Some governments they give out like free phones too. Like,
well, maybe he became homeless and still had a phone, I guess. And then it's just a case of finding somewhere to charge it up is the thing. But I guess you can go into Starbucks these days, right?
Yeah, yeah, you can. And you can even go into McDonald's. And as long as you buy something, for the most part, they're not going to kick you out. But yeah, when I worked at...
Unless you're black, hey, hey.
Oh. There we go. But when I worked at the pharmacy... And I used to sell like track phones and stuff like that to people that they could get online with, and they were not all that expensive, and that's been a few years.
And people also donate their phone, their old ones, because a lot of people that have money, they replace their phones like every year or less. Yep. I know, you get like the new phone like every 6 months, and what happens to your old phone? Well, if you're like somebody who's used to getting like new shit all the time, it just suddenly becomes garbage to you with our consumer culture as it is and how much we throw these things away. So it's possible that he could get his hand on a refurbished phone that's, only like a year old pretty easily. I would imagine generally it wouldn't be that hard for a homeless person to have a phone. And I also think that probably like the money to maintain having a phone line is probably a lot cheaper than bills and rent. So I can see how one could be homeless but have a phone.
It's actually a challenge to get, at least where I am, it's actually a challenge to get an apartment unless you want to live in, you know, basically a shithole. It's a major challenge to get an apartment. Just being able to prove that you work isn't enough. You know, you have to prove that you worked in the same spot for so long and several other things. They want to know all about your income. They want to know, you know, that you're making basically four times the rent, three or four times the rent. And they look into your history. So if you've been arrested for anything, which being homeless is itself criminalized in a lot of places, they'll arrest you for vagrancy. Once you have something like that on your record, it makes it harder to find a place to live. This is one of the bigger problems, particularly for men who are homeless, because they are less likely to be sheltered. Shelters prioritize women and parents with children. So if you're a single man and you're homeless, chances are you've probably got at least one arrest on your record. Chances are you don't necessarily look great to a landlord, and chances are you don't have the kind of history that a landlord is going to trust to sign a lease to say, yeah, I'm gonna make a $5,000 or $6,000 investment in you paying me rent every month here. And part of the reason they do that is because once you move into an apartment, after you've been there for a few weeks, it's hard as hell for them to kick you out. And even when they do kick you out, they can't kick you out and you got to be out right away. They can actually, you know, they got to give you notice, and you can file complaints, and a landlord can get stuck with a bad renter, and they can get stuck with a bad renter for a long time. So this goes both ways. A lot of this has to do with government interfering between in the relationship between the renter and the landlord. But because of that, yeah, it's the fact is, being able to afford a cheap phone, even a cheap phone that can get on the internet, if you have access to Wi-Fi, in which you can at just about any fast food restaurant these days, it doesn't necessarily mean somebody can get a place to live, even if they could afford to pay for it.
But yeah, trolley man. Legit or not, well done. Well done for figuring out what you can do with a trolley. Trolley, yeah. Beats knife. It kind of makes sense. That's why no one gets stabbed in supermarkets. It's sort of like rock, paper, scissors. Trolley beats knife. Truck beats trolley. Knife beats truck.
Yeah. Well, for people who may not know, I'm in the, at least in Chicago, we don't call that a trolley. We call it a shopping cart. So if you have visions in your head of like the San Francisco trolleys that roll up and down the streets, you know, it's not those. It's a shopping cart. This guy threw a shopping cart at this man, this Asian man, Hassan Khalif Shaer Ali, who was
possibly North African.
Possibly. Who was attacking people in this Burke Street Mall. So he threw a shopping cart at him, and he's my age, he's 46. And a homeless man, and you know, it was a good attempt. He helped out, he risked his life, he didn't have anything but a shopping cart. So, I mean, yeah, good on you, man. That's amazing.
Well, and this GoFundMe hopefully will make all the difference in the world for him, because, I mean, that's enough to not only buy a house, but buy a house and have quite a bit left over.
Mm-hmm. Mike, were you going to say something?
Just remember this, if you're worried about knife crime, just carry a trolley around with you. That keeps a couple of feet distance away from you, and, you know, they're pretty sprightly on their feet, those things. I'm sure Sadiq Khan will ban trolleys at any minute now, so do it while you still can.
At least in Chicago, you can't actually do that with shopping carts. They have this device on them now where if you, like, you can't leave the property, or they lock up, and then you can't, like, take them any further. It's sad because everyone should probably just buy them and walk around on the street with them just to stay safe. Just to stay safe until they ban them. So.
There is no reason to carry a trolley in London. No reason at all.
Have a lolly ban that trolley?
Oh, you got a license for that trolley? Okay, so anyway. Any other thoughts on the homeless hero, trolley man? No? Okay, well, we're going to move on to the next story then. But once again, if you guys have any thoughts on this story, don't hesitate to leave us a comment and tell us what you think about this guy. Are you in Melbourne? Do you know somebody that's in there? Do you know anything else about the story that maybe would be interesting? Let us know. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next story. And I'm going to go back to Mike J on this one. Just give me a second here. We're going to be talking about one of the funniest ones ever. Yes, go on, Mike. We're going to talk about blowjobs and consent.
All right, so Radiolab, a public radio-powered podcast which covers a wide range of topics, recently had on feminist Caitlin Priest as a guest as part of a segment titled In the Know. Know here being spelled N-O, not K-N-O-W. Priest discussed consent with educational consultant Hannah Stontland. The discussion covered the, quote, gray areas of consent, cases where one party may come to regret the sex later, but where no sexual assault or rape has actually occurred. During the discussion, Priest championed the idea of affirmative consent. Stontland then brought up the recent cases of two male clients that she had. One client was suspended from school for 2 years because the girl he had sex with claimed the consent she gave beforehand was not genuine. Another male client had similar action taken against him after a girl brought him back to her dorm room and performed oral sex on him, but had not given a verbal yes before the act. Stontland summed up the school's reasoning in this case by stating, quote, "If you go in someone's dorm room and she touches you and places your penis in her mouth, she has not conveyed consent." Priest then, after much pivoting and deflecting, stated,
"It's hard to say yes when your mouth is full, but go on."
My mouth is wide open right now. I'm like, what?
It's rude to speak with your mouth full as well.
It's really rude.
Priest then, after much pivoting and deflecting, stated, "What we're doing right now is working against history. We're trying to make progress on this issue of sexual assault, and the much larger issue of the imbalance of power as it is distributed between the genders. I'm not seeing the young men that I know understanding the power that they have is so easy to abuse. There has to be some kind of consequences if we're going to see a change."
Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy. Up the ass with a chainsaw. I'm sorry, but...
She has not conveyed consent. No, she's conveyed rape, mate.
Progress is not communicating to the world that women have no will of their own and aren't intelligent enough to decide what they do or do not want and are not, that don't basically have the balls to say, I want this or I don't want this, and that what women do, actively do, like take actions with their bodies and do, not have done to them, but actually do, doesn't matter. That's not progress. It's not progress. To like, this guy is actually objectifying women. That is objectifying. You are an object being acted upon if somebody has such a power imbalance that you can perform an act, engage in a behavior, and it's his fault and not yours, and your regret means that you were raped. You can't get more insulting to an intelligent person than to say what you do has no relevance. What you decide isn't your decision. Your actions don't matter because power imbalance. No, fuck that guy.
Yeah, how could you possibly blow somebody without nodding? I mean, isn't that a yes from the beginning, from the get-go, if you're any good at it?
You know, I think, you can't blow somebody without actually using your hands. You know, no offense, but you actually have to, it doesn't just, like, go in there on its own. You know, it's just sitting there bobbing around, you gotta catch it with your mouth. No, this is a physical action. This is a woman who took a hold of a penis with her hand and directed it into her mouth. Because otherwise it wouldn't be in there. She made a choice. That's a choice. That's actually her taking an action. It matters. This pisses me off so bad. I am so sick of hearing feminists act like when we do things, when women do things, that we are not in control of ourselves.
It's all incidental. It's just happening.
This is worse than saying women are children. This is literal objectification.
And that is where Stauntlin did come from it later in the interview. The interview was really hard to quote because it was very all over the place. I don't know if you guys ever listened to Radiolab before. I used to a bit when I actually did listen to NPR. And it's a little bit all over the place, but Stauntlin did come at that from, this is sort of denying agency to people. And it sounds like she's doing good work because I didn't really describe well what her job is as an educational consultant, but that's what she does. She works with people that have been suspended from colleges and stuff like that to try to get them back in. And I guess a lot of the cases she works on are sexual assault, quote unquote, rape cases.
So she's criticizing the school's reasoning.
Yes.
This is good then. She's
not agreeing with that.
Then she's allowed to keep the name Hannah. I've run into some Hannahs that are not allowed to be Hannahs because they can't use that name and then turn around and advocate. This woman can keep the name Hannah.
It was this feminist Caitlin Priest that was the really hard to listen to one, and she was the one basically doing all the pivoting and deflecting and not really addressing it and saying, well, it's different. There are other things that we have to take into account, and it was just very hard to listen to.
Oh, geez, that's another one. Well, fuck that woman. She, guy or woman, I thought, for some reason, I was thinking that Priest was a Prest. Her name is Prest. Is it Prest or Priest?
It's Priest. I think I spelled it two different ways in the write-up, unfortunately.
For some reason, I was thinking she was a guy, because this is something that I see from male feminists all the time. Female feminists will actually, when you point out that they're engaging in objectification like that, they'll back off a little bit sometimes. But male feminists actually like the idea normally of women being completely helpless and stupid. But this, she can kiss my ass, you know, and that's consent. But in any case, yeah, this is nuts.
By the way, you can pronounce the evil Hannahs as Hanach, and that's how we can tell the difference. like the original
I don't know about
pronunciation.
That.
Also, I did fuck up. It is Prest, not Priest. I think it was my autocorrect, and I autocorrected it once, and then it stopped for some reason.
But yeah, consent surely implies, or indeed infers, like two people, some kind of contract, verbally or otherwise, between two people. This is what's fucking me up about what she said. She has not conveyed consent. If a woman goes into your dorm room and cuts your dick off, she has not conveyed consent because you have not consented to it. I don't get how someone even says that sentence. It's like, no, that's not consent. That's one person's actions, completely regardless of another's. And if that's a woman, then it's not. I don't get what you think consent means.
They not only did they get the consent, like the okay. Not only is it wrong that if somebody blows somebody else and they both wanted it, but nobody actually gave verbal affirmation, they didn't like verbally say yes, I want this or yes, I want to do this. Not only did they get that wrong because that just the way that human beings communicate, this goes against it. The fact that you have to stop everything and say, okay, do you mind if I, you know, unbutton your pants and put your dick in my mouth? And he says, actually, that's fine. I think that's okay. You know, like that is ridiculous on its face. But even then, when she actually, they get it wrong in terms of who is being raped here. So they're actually like, they get that wrong, even though the idea that someone's being raped when they both want it is already wrong. But they also got it wrong in that they make the woman the victim still, obviously, because that's the only way they can do things. And these are supposed to be academics. These are supposed to be the smart people, the educated people, the people that people call the experts. That's why this title is so mind-blowing, because they're called sex. It's a sex expert that said this. I weep.
I don't think you actually need any accreditation to call yourself a sex expert.
Yeah, for a long time, nuns did it, remember? It's kind of the same now. For some weird reason, the people in charge of teaching sex to children turn out to be people who have no fucking idea how sex works.
Well, it's funny because
the way it always goes.
The title of the article on one of the on one of the websites for this was NPR Neo-Puritanical Revival.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so I got some super chats. Did somebody else want to say something about this story before I do go to the super chat?
Yeah, there was something. I've been trying to say something for like 2 minutes, and I realized I was muted. But this one of the things that really blows my mind, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended, about the way feminists deal with this. We have, human beings in general, we have multiple types of interactions with other human beings on a daily basis where we do not make a deal as to how we are going to do it. We just, there's sort of a social protocol for it, to borrow a pop culture term, and we just do that. When I worked in retail, there were multiple times when I would have people come up to the counter where I was working at the cash register, and they'd be on their phone, and they'd be talking to somebody other than me, and they would put an object on the counter, and I would, you know, scan the object's barcode, and the computer would tell me how much to charge them, and then they would stick a card into an electronic device, and money would be withdrawn from their account. Not a single word exchanged. No consent, no nothing. Just actions taken. And then I would hit a button and the transaction would be over and I'd give them a piece of paper that says how much money I took out of their account using the computer and put into the account of my employer. And sometimes they would hand me actual currency, paper currency, and I would take it without a single word uttered from either one of us. And put it in the counter cash register and give them back their change without a single word uttered between us other than them talking on their cell phone to somebody else, which is, by the way, very rude. Don't do that to cashiers. It's not nice. But in any case, all of that would take place and an exchange of currency would take place. No stated consent whatsoever. That happened all the time. And then, of course, you know, when I was younger and I used to go out with friends and stuff, you'd go out to a club or a bar or something. There's sometimes people get a little drunk and they start a fight and they go up and they hit somebody. And then the fight happens. They hit, the person hits back. And the next thing you know, there's a knockdown drag out brawl and the bouncer has to come over and throw them both out. And they never utter necessarily a single, "May I hit you?" Yes, you may hit me. Well, I am consenting to now engage in fisticuffs with you. Let's hit each other back and forth. No, they just do it. It's an mutually engaged action. We have this happen all the time. We have this happen at traffic stops. We have this happen at a lot of times, you know, you get pulled over, an officer hands you a ticket and you sign it. He doesn't say, "Will you sign this?" You just do it. Did you consent to signing that? Just all kinds of things like that happen without necessarily somebody asking for consent and stating consent. And sometimes it's things that people don't want to do. Sometimes it's things people are not happy about having done. And yet, unique among all of the types of social and business interactions that human beings can engage in, unique among all of the different ways that we communicate with each other through physical interaction, not just verbal, but exchange of actions without having to discuss them ahead of time, is sex. And all of a sudden, like, women are so bad at sex, apparently, that unique among all of these other things is this one action that is just so paralyzing to women because women are so bad at it, so incompetent to deal with it, that they have to be treated with kid gloves and asked every step of the way, this thing that you are doing, this action that you are taking, is it a choice you are making? because apparently women just can't handle sex. And, you know, I think that's kind of the mentality that in the first place led to things like the idea that men can sleep around and there's nothing wrong with their behavior, but when women do it, there's something wrong and they've been victimized or they've been sullied or dirtied and everything. The idea that women are incompetent to deal with sex, to handle sex the way men handle sex, is how there became an imbalance in judgment in the first place regarding people's sexual choices. So feminists are actually promoting the thing that they hate by doing this. And it blows my mind that they have started down this path and gotten so far down this path without even realizing that they have made sex unique among all of the types of engagements and interactions that people can have with each other. And in that one area of life, have determined that women are just completely incompetent and have to be babysat by their sex partners.
So the last thing I was joking, and I don't know if you guys heard it, but I was just joking about how, with regards to this article, now I know the reason why. Well, every time I run into stuff like this, where intellectuals say really dumb shit, I am reminded why in Dungeons and Dragons, wisdom and intelligence are two different stats. and both are important. But okay, so we're gonna move on to the last story, and again I want to thank you guys for your patience as I deal with technical bullshit that is out of my control. So a word before we get into this next story. So my original source was Washington Post, which is the original source for this article. Unfortunately, Washington Post articles can only be viewed by people with an account, or if you happen to have an account and you archive it, which I should have looked up, but I didn't. But since I don't have any plans on supporting them, because most of the time the WAPO is full of shit, I'm going to be citing CNET.com, which is one of many other websites that use Washington Post's original story as the source for this story. So let's get into it. Palmer Luckey, the founder of Oculus and pioneer into the silver age of virtual reality, left Facebook last year suddenly. We did a story on it, if you guys remember. He left Facebook last year suddenly. This sparked rumors that he may have been ousted for political reasons. The reason for these rumors is that Luckey secretly made a $10,000 donation to an anti-Hillary Clinton group during the 2016 presidential election. And then, 6 months later, he was out of the company. No explanation. During later congressional hearings around social media and censorship, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, you might have remembered these, called Luckey's departure a personal issue that would be inappropriate to address and denied it had anything to do with Palmer Luckey's political views. All details associated with specific personnel matters are kept strictly confidential. This is our policy for all employees, no matter their seniority, a Facebook spokesperson said. But we can say unequivocally that Palmer's departure was not due to his political views. Not due to his political views. Not due to his political views. We always made it clear that any mention of politics was up to Palmer, and we did not pressure him to say something that wasn't factual or true. The revelation comes amid suspicion among some conservatives towards Silicon Valley, who accuse companies such as Facebook, Google, and Twitter of a liberal bias, or a left-wing bias, more accurately, and suppression of conservative voices. In August, President Trump accused Google of doctoring its search results for, quote, Trump news, end quote, to show only negative coverage about him, a charge that Google also denied. But it seems that may indeed be the reason Luckey had left the company. In fact, it seems that he was fired from the company and for his political views. According to sources that spoke to the Washington Post, Luckey was placed on leave and then fired for supporting Orange Man Bad Dotard Blumpf because Facebook was unhappy with Luckey's donation. Executives pressured him to publicly voice support for then-libertarian candidate Gary Dudeweed LMAO Johnson. Lucky then got a lawyer who made the argument that Facebook illegally punished an employee for political activity, essentially pressuring him to voice support for Gary Johnson because it was discovered that he supported an anti-Clinton campaign. So they figured, well, if it's going to be anti-Clinton, it can't be pro-Trump. So we're going to make him support Gary Johnson instead. I guess it's less evil. Lucky reportedly received a $100 million payout for the legal battle, which, of course, no one reported on. It already happened. This is a big deal because there has been a lot of suspicion among many across the political spectrum that Silicon Valley, which includes Facebook, Google, and Twitter, have a left-wing bias and suppress what they would consider troubling opinions. I mean, that is, of course, save for Saudi caliphates, ISIS, and Louis Farrakhan, and those guys are okay. Zuckerberg himself was questioned by Congress in April after the deplatforming of Diamond and Silk, two right-wing black women who often made political commentary on that platform and also had a very large following. In addition, a senior Facebook engineer also left the company following his penning of a controversial memo criticizing the workplace as a, quote, political monoculture that's intolerant of different views. Yes, that's something that also happened that not a lot of people knew about. He never specified why he was leaving, but he did say that it wasn't because, quote, it's time for something new, end quote. Lucky could not be reached for comment, but he did express his support for the Oculus team, and he roots for their success. All right. So, you guys have any thoughts about this story, or am I offline again?
Personally, I'm just kind of surprised he was on there for as long as he was.
Why do you say that?
Because I thought when this whole thing was going down that they were going to drop the axe on him back then. I'm like, wait, he was still employed with them for a while?
Well, I guess they couldn't just get rid of him because he's like the guy behind the Oculus Rift. They probably had to figure out what to do. Maybe as things move closer and closer to the election, it got more and more stressful in the workplace. And then when maybe, I don't know what the timing of his firing was. Was it before or after the election was over? Because it could have something to do with whether or not Trump actually won. But again, I don't have access to the actual WAPO article, so I don't know for sure. But I mean, yeah, I take your point. I guess the folks in Silicon Valley put up with this stuff for a while, but there's probably like a breaking point, right? So...
Well, you know, I want to go back to one thing that Zuckerberg did early on in the sort of congressional investigation process when they were looking at Twitter and Facebook and their political bias and all that. They threatened him basically with potential regulation. They said, you know, you don't want us. We don't really want to have to regulate this area, which is them saying, don't make us do this because we will. And his response was very telling. Oh, yes, go ahead, regulate me. When a company wants, you know, or the CEO of a company wants the government to come in and start regulating, it's not because he wants oversight. It's not because he wants accountability. It's not because he cares about the ethics of his interactions with his employees and his consumers and so on. It's because he can figure out a way to use those regulations to protect himself from competition. And I still say this is a long game by these social media giants to get some kind of regulations into place that gives them personally, their CEOs, their boards, more control over public speech and more control over competition for this sector of public communications. That is what their end game is finding a way to leverage government power against their users and their competition. And I don't think there's any other goal for this other than maybe if they can find a way to make money off of such regulation. Like, obviously, if regulations are complex, you know, like the tax code and environmental codes and things like that, you have to now have an entire new area, a new professional area to deal with that, consultants. And, you know, accountants are tax consultants. And you have, like, I've got a family member who is an environmental scientist and a lawyer, who his job for years and years was helping companies know what they have to do to comply with federal environmental law. That's, you know, another possible area here where they're wanting to have an area of consultation, needed consultation, where, you know, there'd be a job to do there. Somebody have to come in and consult with new social media companies to let them know what they have to do to comply with federal communications laws that would be created to govern this area. That's what they're trying to do. They want the government to regulate political speech on social media and regulate social media itself. I'm 100% sure of that. And there would actually have to be changes in the way that Facebook and Twitter are behaving, or they would have to come out with something that would convince me of another potential reason why they're doing this. They're pushing for this regulation, not because it would protect you and me, but because they can exploit it in some way or another.
All right. Yeah, there you go. Anybody else got thoughts on this story of Palmer Luckey versus social media getting fired from Facebook for not towing the line? I mean, it's not like it's not like we don't know that about that culture anyway, but the Palmer Luckey story is should be a big deal. That's why I did a thing on it. You know, everyone should know that this happened because they kept it hush hush. And then the other guy who said that Facebook is the workplace at Facebook is a political monoculture that is intolerant of different views. I didn't even know the guy's name. So I didn't even know that this story existed. So I thought it was pretty interesting. And Facebook is also the same company, mind you, that named one of its rooms the Anita Sarkeesian Room. Not kidding. It's actually a photo of Anita Sarkeesian outside of it, pointing at it saying, OMG, what is this? So, yeah, that's a thing.
I just wish this kind of stuff could still surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that feel. I got a super chat. I missed some super chats from before. Guys, I'm sorry. I hope I read them all, but I don't know if I did.
Well, I guess you'll just have to send us more money.
Yeah, I apologize for that. I think there were some. So because when the stream crashed, I wasn't able to look at them. And I can't look at a record of them either. So I apologize for people whose super chats I did not read. But French Honey Badger, also known as Encapistan, gives us $5 and says, Hannah, here's a hug. Thank you for citing regulatory capture. Do not support any regulatory increase of any form. It will be used against you. And Encapistan has spoken.
Well, and he's right. I mean, this is exactly what happens every time. We need this for people's protection. And then it gets put into place and it gets used against people instead. Guaranteed they'll use it to shut down Gab.
All right. Anyway, we're going to go on to the after show. We're going to look at this satirical. It is a satire piece. It's made to make fun of people obsessed with identity politics. So don't get mad at the title. But it is time to cast a Black Stan Lee. I'd be really interested to see how funny this gets, because I could use a laugh right now. So I'm ready to cry. If you want to be a part of that, you have to become a patron at www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. I am hoping that the streams there will stay more stable than this fucking one did. And but one level of patronage will let you watch the streams as though you're watching the show that you're watching right now. And another level will let you join us on the Discord to participate, either through text message or even through voice. So consider doing that if you want to be a part of the action at patreon.com/honeybadgerradio for as long as we're going to have a Patreon. Who knows? Like, that's also Silicon Valley, so we may not be promised Patreon forever. We may have to come up with something else. I don't know. But with that said, I guess I got nothing else to speak on this topic. And I want to thank you guys for coming on this episode of HBR News. And I want to, of course, thank my co-panelists, Hannah, Mike, and Mike. And yeah, we'll see you guys in the next one. And have a lovely, lovely day. Also, again, go to Feed the Badger and send me to Toronto. Help send me to Toronto so I can meet up with fucking Scum Girl if she's there. Who knows? Maybe we'll see her. Or even Big Red. She could show up. She's Canadian. So that'd be cool. All right. Talk to you guys later, and thanks again for coming on this episode of HBR News. Have a good night, everybody.